he had done me wrong, and he came to me and he was confessing what he had done and asked for my forgiveness. And I told him, I said, look, I forgave you a long time ago because I don't want to hang on to that baggage. And he looked surprised. And he said, well, I hope then our relationship can get back to where it was. And I said, I don't think so. And he was shocked. He said, why don't you think so? I said, because I still don't trust you. And he said, but you forgave me. Yeah, I forgave you. But just because you forgive someone doesn't mean you need to trust them.
One that says forgiven and forgiving, because you can't have one without the other. I want you to hear that right now. You cannot be forgiven if you cannot forgive. Amen. You need to know that. You see, God's love is unconditional, but his forgiveness has a condition. In this parable it's talking about today, it was talking about a man who owed a great sum of money. We probably figured around $4 billion in today's money. And he had another servant that owed this servant $4,000. Well, when the master forgave the $4 billion, he went out and tried to collect $4,000. And you see from the scripture reading today what happened. I want you to know today that forgiving other people is not a choice you cannot make. You cannot come to me and say, I cannot forgive someone. Because if you cannot forgive someone, guess what? God cannot forgive you. I want you to hear that loud and clear, because I think a lot of us, when it comes to our walk with God, thinks it's okay to carry grudges, to be unforgiving towards other people. We think that's just one of those things that we can deal with. Let me tell you this, when you do not forgive others, you are in sin. And I want that to be very clear to you today as we go through this. I was talking to someone yesterday and they were telling me, I wish somebody would learn this. And I thought, well, I'm going to do a sermon on it tomorrow. They can hear the sermon if they want to learn. The problem is, with a lot of us, we don't want to forgive, so we don't want to learn how to do it. If you got your lesson notes, I want you to see some things that are mistaken about mistaken ideas about forgiveness. Number one, time heals all wounds. Time heals all wounds. That's a mistake. Time does not heal all wounds. Time and the right decisions will heal all wounds. But time in and of itself will not heal all wounds. Number two, I must deny hurt when I forgive others. I must deny hurt when I forgive others. I've had some people that have hurt me tremendously in my life. They have done things that it just hurt me to the core. And I can still forgive them, but it doesn't mean I have to say, well, that didn't hurt. I'm going to tell you right now, if Austin was to come up here and slap me, which he would never do, for several reasons, one of them is I'll punch him. But if he was to come up here and slap me, and then I would say, Austin, you shouldn't have done that, I forgive you, it doesn't mean the slap still didn't hurt. It's definitely still hurt. Number three, true forgiveness means I must confess it. True forgiveness means I must confess it. I had one guy, I'll never forget him. He was a friend of Nancy's parents. And I was coming to visit them, and he was going to be there. And evidently, my mother-in-law said some things about me that I teased pretty hard and that I needed to be careful because you'll get sarcastic sometimes. Now, I don't know where she got that idea. And I had no idea why she felt like she should tell somebody else this, but I remember this guy, we were having fun and we were playing ping pong and we were talking and everything. He says, Neil, I just got to tell you, I didn't like you when I first met you. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, well, you know, your mother-in-law said some things about you, and I just decided I didn't like you. Okay. What do you want me to do now? You see, confessing something like that has nothing to do with forgiveness. So there are some times when you need to do that.
If the other people, they know they have been wrong. If they know they have been wrong, then you need to confess it. Matthew 5:23-24
talks about taking our gifts. So if someone is aware of the fact that they have been wrong, you need to go and confess it, that I have wronged you in some way.
And there are other times is if God opens your heart to it. If God opens your heart to it, that's when you need to go and confess something's going on.
But I would say to you, if you're going to confess something like that, you might want to take some time and process that
and talk about what it is that you want to confess to. Because a lot of times if you confess to something that they don't know anything about, you're going to make things worse than what it is. Number four, this is a mistaken idea about forgiveness. Forgiveness and trust are the same thing. Forgiveness and the trust are the same thing. I had a teenage boy brought his mom to me and said, I asked my mom to forgive me for running out on the streets Saturday night, and she still got me on restriction. And I said, doesn't forgiveness mean that she's got to just forgive and forget? I'm like, no, not at all. You see, forgiveness, it's in your notes, forgiveness is given, trust is earned. Forgiveness is given and trust is earned. Had a fella come to me. He was working the 12 steps and he had done me wrong, and he came to me and he was confessing what he had done and asked for my forgiveness. And I told him, I said, look, I forgave you a long time ago because I don't want to hang on to that baggage. And he looked surprised. And he said, well, I hope then our relationship can get back to where it was. And I said, I don't think so. And he was shocked. He said, why don't you think so? I said, because I still don't trust you. And he said, but you forgave me. Yeah, I forgave you. But just because you forgive someone doesn't mean you need to trust them. John 2, verse 24, Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men. I love what C.S. Lewis wrote here. It doesn't mean you must necessarily believe his next promise. It does mean that you must make every effort to kill every trace of resentment in your own heart, every wish to humiliate or hurt him or to pay him out. Number five, forgive and forget. Forgive and forget. That doesn't work. That's a mistaken idea about forgiveness. It comes from Jeremiah 31-34. It says, I will forgive their wickedness and I will remember their sins no more. A lot of people feel like when it comes to forgiveness, you just got to forget the thing ever happened. Well, I have not learned how to do that. And God says that he will forget, but I pretty much know that God still can remember if he wants to. I think the idea behind this verse here is that we will treat them as it never happened. That's what it means by for remember their sins no more. Well, here's some roadblocks that I've got. I've got 10 down here. I came up with 17, and I knew I wouldn't have enough time because Jan was going to be leading singing, and he was going to talk through most of my sermon. But I got it down to 10. Look at this. Number one of the roadblocks, holding a grudge. You're just going to hold a grudge. I heard about two men. One of them was dying. The other guy came to see him, and he said to him, he says, you know, we've been having this grudge for many years, and you're about to die. I want us to just make peace with each other. And so they made peace. And before he left the room, the guy looked at him. He said, but if you get better, the grudge is still on. You see, we want to hold that grudge. We want to hold on to it. And that comes from number two, self-pity. We've got some people in this audience even that just have such self-pity all the time. As a matter of fact, I had a friend that had such self-pity that he looked at me one day, he says, if I could drop dead right now, I'd be the happiest man on earth. And I said, I'll second that motion. But the thing of it is we want to wallow in our pity. Number three, anger. We won't forgive somebody because of our anger, and anger and danger go hand in hand. Number four, fear. We fear being vulnerable in front of somebody by asking for forgiveness or forgiving them. And then number five is pride. Pride. You see, our temper, Mark Twain says, our temper will get us in trouble, but it is our pride that keeps us there. Have you ever thought about that? A lot of times pride will keep you there. I know this friend of mine. This is long before GPSs. I know most of you would have to go back to your history books to figure out that out. But before we had GPSs, we just had to kind of know where we were going. And this guy got lost one day, and he was so prideful he wouldn't pull over and ask for directions. He knew he was lost. His wife knew he was lost. His children knew he was lost. The neighbors that had seen him circle the block four times, they knew he was lost. And his wife looked at him and said, honey, are we lost? He says, no, ma'am, I'm just taking you the scenic route. Because his pride wouldn't let him admit that he was wrong. Number six, revenge. And I got in your notes, whoever opts for revenge should dig two graves. I asked Austin today, I said, Austin, have you ever heard of Amos and Andy? And I thought for myself, Amos, he's not going to know this, but that kid knows everything. And I said, you are too young to know about Amos and Andy. And he says, well, we read about it in history books. Amos and Andy were these two characters, and Amos would go up to Andy and hit him on the chest all the time, just smack him on the chest. He was getting tired of it, so Andy decided that he was going to take care of it. And he says, you know how Amos comes up to me all the time, and he's hitting me on the chest? He says, I'm going to fix him for good. And he opens up his jacket, and he's got six sticks of dynamite on him. And he says, the next time he hits me on the chest, boom, gonna blow his hand off. That was good comedy back then. Number seven, judgmental spirit. We judge others by their actions, and we judge ourselves by our intentions. And we have this happen all the time. Number eight, unwillingness to forgive. There are some of us in here that have told me, I mean, I've heard this from more than one Christian, I cannot and I will not ever forgive that person. And I just think, I cringe when I hear that, because that is a spiritual death sentence. Number nine, insecurity. Insecurity. There's some kind of insecurity going on. They can't forgive other people. And number 10 is alibis. These are the excuses or the reason that they don't forgive other people. I have heard people in the church that says, I do not have to forgive this person because they did not ask for my forgiveness. And I want to tell them, did Jesus forgive you before or after you asked for it? Because Jesus went on the cross before you were ever born. The other thing, I when I see that, I think to myself, they said, you know, in order for me to forgive somebody, I don't have to forgive them unless they ask. Well, Jesus, on the cross, they were not asking, said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. I'm saying that we as a body of believers, that we as Christians need to be ready to forgive anytime we need to. On the back, the road back to forgiveness. We had the roadblocks. Now we've got the road back to forgiveness. Number one, realize what God has done for you. Realize what God has done for you. Most of us in here, I'm going to say most of us, because Some of you are unsavory characters. But most of us in here have led pretty decent lives. Most of us in here haven't done anything really, really bad. So what do? We feel like we don't need the same forgiveness as the person next to us. If y'all haven't noticed by now, I love Austin Drake. I love that boy to death. He gets on my nerves, but I love him to death. But out of all the people that I have ever met in my life, Austin Drake is probably one of the best men I have ever met. He is good to the core, unlike me. Austin doesn't have to try to be good. I have to fight to be good. And I love him to death for that. But guess what? He needs the same amount of forgiveness for sin that I do. There's no difference between me and Austin because he is good to the core. He still needs that forgiveness. And when we understand that we need that forgiveness and we realize what God has done for us, it'll make it easier for us to forgive others. Our pockets are empty while our debt is in millions. We don't need a salary, we need a gift. We don't need swimming lessons, we need a lifeguard. We don't need a place to work, we need someone to work in our place. And that someone is Jesus Christ. Number two, realize that forgiveness is a choice and not an emotion. It's a faith decision. Forgiveness is a choice, not an emotion. I have to choose to forgive someone. I cannot wait until I feel like forgiving someone. I have to make that choice. And one of the things that I have learned is that when you make the right choices, your feelings go with you down the road. You see, a lot of times I don't feel happy, but if I make the choice to be happy, eventually I get happy. I don't feel like forgiving someone, but if I will forgive them, my heart will follow. Number three, understand the consequences to me. If you don't forgive someone, understand the consequences to me. One of the things that I have seen over the years when I have had struggles to forgive someone is it does not hurt them. It doesn't bother them. I have a feeling that if there was somebody in the room today that I needed to forgive and I hadn't forgiven, I don't think they'd be losing sleep over it. But I'm going to tell you this. When I won't forgive somebody, I will lose sleep over it. One of the things that I like to do during communion, my meditations while we're partaking of communion, is I like to think to myself, God, is there anyone that I need to make amends with? Is there anyone that my relationship is not what it needs to be? Is there anyone that I need to forgive? Because if I need to do that, I'm going to make sure that I'm right with others as I worship. Number four, forgiveness is an immediate thing. Forgiveness is an immediate thing. It's something you need to do right now. And I hope and I pray that as we're talking about this idea of forgiveness, I hope that somebody comes to your mind that you need to forgive. I hope that you've got somebody in your heart that just bubbles up in your head that you've had anger for, that you've had issues with, that has wronged you in some way that you need to forgive. I hope and I pray that that will come to you today. And the reason why I hope and pray that that will come to you today, so that you can forgive right now. You can just make a conscious decision to God that, God, I have been carrying this with me for so long, and today I lay it at your feet as I forgive them. And don't look at me and say, Neil, you don't know what they have done. Let me tell you what you have done. You put Jesus on the cross. And I don't care what somebody has done to you, no matter how despicable it is or how wrong it is, it's nothing compared to me putting Jesus on the cross because of my sin. I love the little girl who was learning the Lord's Prayer. And she said, "Father, forgive our trash baskets as we forgive people who put trash in our baskets." And I don't care what kind of trash people have put in your basket, you need to forgive. And number five, and this is so hard on us, because we are living a culture where it's about me and about my rights and about what I think, and view others as a tool for growth. When we start looking at our brothers and sisters who are, you know, there are some people in here that need a little extra grace, amen? When you start seeing that person as somebody that you can grow, that can help you grow, if you start seeing somebody that gets on that very last nerve, and you start talking to God about him, say, "God, how is it that I can grow from this person?" This morning, as we close out this sermon, we close it out with an invitation song. And the reason why we close it out with an invitation song, Father, wants us to be his children. Our Father wants us to be his kids. There was a time when my younger son was turning 9, I think, 8 or 9. And he came to me and he sat down with me, and it was just me and him. And he said, "Dad, can I get in your lap?" And I said, "Sure, son, come on." And he got up in my lap and he said, "Dad, I don't think I want to grow up." And I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah, I like being this age." And I was stunned, because I liked having it at that age. But we sat there for a few minutes, and I looked at him and I said, "Son, if you don't grow up, that means you're not going to reach your full potential in this life. And you are so smart, and you are so good looking. You take after your dad. You're so smart, you take after your mom. But you've got so much potential. And if you stay this age right here and you don't grow up, not only are you going to miss out on a lot, but I'm going to miss out on a lot. The whole world is going to miss out on a lot." He said, "Okay, Dad, I'll grow up." And he got off my lap, and I think that was the last time he was in my lap. We have a Father in heaven that wants us to grow up. He loves us dearly where we are right now. He wants us to reach our potential. He wants us to enjoy the things he has prepared for us. But more than anything, he wants us to go out and change the world. And the only way we can do that is if we grow up. So as we sing this invitation song, ask God what areas in your life that you need to grow up in. The invitation is yours.